This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting December
19th, 2007. Good afternoon. We're going to go ahead and start the employee assembly meeting December 19th, 2007. I'd like to call the meeting to order. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone here, call for any late additions to the agenda. Yes, Leon.
Sue and Hope.
Say it again.
Sue and Hope.
We'll put that down on new business. Right after EA elections. Okay, any other late additions? See, the business of the day, Vice President Mary George Opperman, she's not here, so what we're going to do is we're going to move on until she does show up, and then we're going to put her right back in. So a report from the chair. We held, well, my first George Peter Award ceremony for David Cobb, he works over in plant sciences. It was, I think it was a great ceremony. He was shocked. His wife was able to attend. It was incognito because once they happened to be having their Christmas departmental Christmas luncheon, and this was all surprise. Like we all show up, and once he saw his wife, he would know something's up with him. So we were hiding her in the hallway, and it's funny. He was getting food in the hallway while we were coming in. And so people are ducking and hiding, and it was nice, though. It was a really nice ceremony. The guy well deserved award for him, from what I know. At our officers' meeting, we discussed the idea that there's an employee assembly handbook, and it has different descriptions and duties of different positions on the EA. For instance, as chair, this is what you do, and this is what is to be expected. And I'd ask the officers to update their handbooks. That's going to be happening. There are some other committee members. It's going to be going around to everybody to kind of put in what you do. This handbook's a little on the old side, so it's going to be, we're going to update it. That way, if somebody's interested in becoming the chair, for example, they can look at this and kind of see everything that they do or what's expected of them. We were all in agreement that that'd be a good thing to do to pass along to everybody. Well, we're closing the year. I know we have the winter retreat coming up next month, but we're going to get to that later. Next item, I'd like to talk about committee appointments. For the University Benefits Committee, we got interest by a person named Debbie Hunt. And if you have anything that you'd like to say about them, you can do so now. Open floor, good things, bad things. Okay, with that in mind, Amy, we'd like to move forward and appoint Debbie to the University Benefits Committee. Next committee appointment is Sandy Sussman. If anybody has any?
No, Sandy asked for a person. That's who we're placing.
Oh, that's it. Oh, okay. My apologies. Good afternoon.
Hi, sorry I'm late.
That's okay. Do you want to get some food?
No, I'm actually double booked. So.
Okay. Yeah, so we're going to move right on to the business of the day. Mary George Osmond is here, attending, and we have a few things that we'd like to ask you.
Sure. Can we possibly leave the Cornell as a caring community to a time when I don't have to run to another meeting?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. That seems like it's sort of a big thing.
Oh, definitely. Okay. Like that, and we'll push that off. Okay, we have on there an update on the child care center. We've heard about it. What are the details? What is it happening? Timeline?
Okay.
How does it work?
So one thing you should know is that we have a university assembly committee. Bill, are you our liaison to that committee?
Not to the family services.
No, to, you are to family services.
To family services,
who,
yes.
Who is to the...
I'm drawing a blank on his name right now.
Okay.
Quite honestly. For the, what's that? Abe, that's right.
Oh, okay, right. Amy's on the... Amy, are you on the child care committee? So your best way to get updates is actually right here in the room. because Amy goes to the committee that meets at least, I don't know, every week or every other week. That we have helping us make some of the decisions around design, enrollment, enrollment rules, sign up, that sort of thing. We are in the ground. The footers are going in. We're still aiming for an August 2008 opening. We are anticipating that we will be full pretty quickly.
Okay.
So the committee right now is looking at enrollment strategies.
Okay.
We had our first set of conversations with the licensing group that will license the center. They've made some modifications to the infant rooms in terms of sight lines. So we're working with the architects to change some of the sight lines in the infant room. And that's about it. We anticipate an increased need for the grant program. So we've gone forward through the budget process to increase the funds available through the grant program so that staff and faculty and students will have a better chance of affording it. So we've kept the cost of it moderate, but it's still an expensive center. The university anticipates, not counting the grant, about $1 million a year in subsidy. That's before the grant. And we're anticipating a pretty significant growth in the grant, which is now at $1.2 million a year. But that's for everyone. So that's all. 158 students, children, whatever you call them when they're in a daycare center. About 50-50, give or take. The highest number in the preschool. I think 60 in the preschool, 50 in each of the other two centers, infant and toddler. Amy, did you want to add anything?
Just the committee's been making good progress on the checklist from Bright Horizons as far as policies and enrollment and making decisions as much as possible, trying not to reinvent the wheel. So they're doing a good job.
Could you go over enrollment again since the breakup between faculty?
Yes, 60 in the preschool, 50 in the toddler, and 48 in the infant.
And from what I'm asking though is the population, how many, a lot of seats for faculty?
We're not going to do it that way. That's one of the things that the committee is looking at. But there'll be an application period, and people will apply. We are thinking that we'll hold some number of open slots in each of the rooms for recruits during the year. But right now, we're not anticipating holdouts by category. That's actually extremely expensive. So it's, you know, we're looking at it as a single community center. So the biggest concern I have right now is that graduate student applications and acceptances are off cycle of when you would normally apply. And what we don't want to have happen is have the center be full when the graduate students know they're coming and have no place to apply. They're the group I'm the most worried about in terms of fair access to the center. So the committee, I think, is looking at that right now. Is that right, Amy?
Yes, we're trying to get into the orientation process and into each department so that when grad students are applying, they have information if they need it.
I think we should just be aware of, no matter, I had a faculty member come to see me to say, you should charge more so that, because we can afford it, and we would rather have lower ratios because that's more important to us and that's what you should do. Mm-hmm. Then I got a letter from an employee, a staff member, who thought it was outrageous that we let students have any of the spots, that it should really just be for the staff and the faculty. And, I mean, there's nothing we can do about this. When you're talking about the first center and a dire need for space, people look for their interests. And, you know, I've gotten communications from graduate students very worried about their about having fair access given their application date. So, you know, the best thing I can tell you is, you know, don't become hysterical if you hear something. It's just the way it is. You know, and don't promulgate misinformation. It's a center open to everyone. If you have a question, ask Amy. Amy will take it through the process. It's a very empowered committee.
It is. For representation from grad students who are looking out for that different cycle, like you said.
And there's a reason why we brought in an outside firm to manage it. And this is the time when you realize why you brought in an outside firm to manage it. Because if you had to mediate these for yourself, you'd drive yourself crazy. And also because they run hundreds of centers, and so everything that seems absolutely befuddling to us, they have experience with. It's really been helpful. So that's the update. Going well.
What is the age ranges?
From infant to preschool.
But does that mean 1 day old, 2 weeks old?
I believe it's 12 weeks old.
6 weeks.
6 weeks old.
Pretty early.
To five.
Preschool runs to, I think, up to six.
Okay.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, until your child is eligible or choose to send to kindergarten.
Every child.
Yeah, well, up to six.
Yeah.
So if you want to hold your child back to go, they can keep them in preschool 1 year. But if you
they're
really
all
like
out
it, you do have to go. You go to school because the law makes you send them.
And is it open during the summer or just during the academic year?
No, it's a 12-month year-round program.
Monday through Friday.
It's going to work on Cornell's calendar.
And it's going to be new Cornell employees that are going to be staffing?
No, they'll be Bright Horizon employees that are staffing it. Yeah.
Okay. Could I ask one other question? Do you have a sense of how many graduate students come with families or come with children?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay.
More leave here with children than come here.
It's a population by just by the demographics that is childable. You know, it's just their ages. I think I did. Yeah. So it'll be an absolutely lovely center. Yeah, it absolutely will. It will not meet every need on this campus. Not everyone wants their children in institutionalized care. Not everyone who does will be able to get into this center. The more children you have, the harder it is to have your kids in a daycare center. It's very expensive to have one child in. It's unbelievably expensive to have two, and it's truly prohibitive to have three. So we have to continue to look at ways to support family care providers in New York State, and we need to, step up to the idea of helping match individuals with live-ins, whether they live-in, or come in for the day. Especially multiple children families, it's much cheaper to actually have one person come into your house than try to pay for all those to pay for all those slots.
Are the hours just for first shift people or second or third?
They're looking at all of that now. The length of the hours of operation of the center are really being reviewed. I don't know that we've come with any final decisions.
The hours that they've decided on preliminarily are 7 in the morning until 6 p.m.
But the issue about how long an individual can keep their child there is something that they'll have to work on. Yeah. It won't be a center. We can't afford to run a 24-hour center. We would easily double the cost of the subsidy because you can't fill it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can't make the age frame just because of licensing and regulation.
Right. So if you have three kids and they're each in a... Different. One's an infant, one's a toddler, and one's you have to have three teachers there.
Right.
And remember where it is. So having a center open all night on North Campus, orientation week, you know, we're just not really going to do that. So, but we'll get pressure for that too. I mean, that's part of this. Once you get into this, you open the door to these things. This is when you start to feel more. And that's good. That's healthy.
But it's happening.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're crawling up the hill here.
Thank you. And then the next.
You just want to use the listserv to send out information?
Yes. We had something that we wanted to get out to everybody.
All the staff?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And how would that work? Should we send it to your office? Mm-hmm. And then you guys
send it out to, through the listserv. But what you have to make sure you know before you send it is, are you sent, is it where it's going everywhere you need it to go and only where you want it to go?
Right.
Okay. So I can, we have a sort of definition when we say the staff email, but it may not be your definition. So we can use it, but you should make sure you give yourself enough time to understand what we're, who we're sending it to.
Okay. Is there someone there that may answer these questions for us as we move on with it?
I'm guessing probably Greg, right, could tell us.
Greg doesn't work.
Sorry.
but he probably could.
Huh?
You
look
for?
No.
Ann.
Ann thought.
Okay.
I know Greg doesn't work
for you. You were there for his party, weren't you?
Yes, I think about it. That's not it was sad.
But he probably has those answers too. So
but actually, I'm not even sure that's right. Well, anyway, start with Ann and go from there.
Okay.
I guess, I don't
to see who it's hitting, because we have our whole.
Might be George Medler in CIT.
George Medler is who I've worked with in the past.
He sends it, but it's just worth taking a little bit of time. You don't want to send something about elections to someone you aren't covering, or you'll hear back.
Okay.
So it go, mm-hmm. you know, and you don't want to miss groups of people that you did mean to have it go to.
Definitely.
That's very true.
Yeah.
That's all we have.
Anything
yeah.
else before I have a very important message I'm giving all week long, which is this break that's coming up as of Close of Business Friday. Nobody should be working on the break. This should be an actual break. Like, no work, no email, no work. Unless you're called in and you're required to work, I hope people who have the choice not to work are actually not working. And I can tell you the senior staff is not working. And it's the first time since I've been here that the leadership of the university has made that decision. So there shouldn't be any pressure coming from below or above. So if you're creating pressure below you, you know, just recognize what you're doing. We need a break. We need to not be working. And I will say it's also the first year where I think if you do work, it's actually not going to be seen in a very positive way. Certainly not in the Office of Human Resources. Take your break.
So definitely don't send Mary emails.
I actually told the staff in my office I was keeping my email on and writing down the names of anyone I got. And I'm going to.
No, wait a minute. It's not working.
Not if I don't do anything. It's revenge. I know that people do this to themselves. They say, well, I'm just going to get caught up when I'm on the break. But you need to take the break. Break means break. No work, no thinking about work, no worrying about obsessing about thinking that you're getting caught up, and no work. Okay?
We appreciate that.
Yeah, but nobody's nodding.
So just
I think you have performance dialogues. Performance dialogues are due right after we come back. So.
Well,
yeah.
Then they'll be a week late. Look, I know, I understand, because everyone has learned this. It's like free time, except we keep having the same real conversation. It keeps reeling around. If you don't take this particular break, there's none like it.
Right.
Every vacation you take other than this break, everyone besides you is working. And so you come back to this pile of work. This is the, and if everyone did it, if everyone actually used the break for a break, everyone would come back refreshed and with no more in their inbox than they left with.
Because nothing happened while you were gone.
Hmm?
Right, because
exactly.
Nothing happened while you were gone.
I think I know that it's all well intended, but people come back from the break exhausted, and we don't get another break. Some of us don't get another break till July.
Thank you for
take your break.
Thank you very much.
Thank
for
you,
you know, read a book. read to, go cross country skiing if you like.
Check some emails.
Do some work.
You gotta get online, go shopping, you know. There's a lot of good online sales. I'm not persuasive at all. You all are going to do whatever you want.
No, we
we got
the trend real hard.
Of human resources.
We got the message, and I hopefully everybody does take advantage of it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything.
Have a good holiday, Mary.
See ya.
Thank you very much for coming.
But I'll be here. Lab goes on. I'll be here. But don't send me an email. I'm not reading it.
I'm going to move over here.
I'm going to forward it.
Okay, we're going to move on. That's it from the chair and business of the day. And now we'll move on to Michael's report from the employee trustee.
The trustees had committee meetings 2 weeks ago. So I went to the Buildings and Properties Committee, and
yay, the best committee!
It is the best committee, not only because it's fun, but it's also staffed by Don Goff. So two of the public things to note are the waste management, good times, and the food science renovations in Stockton Hall. Other than that, there will be a full slate of meetings third week in January, and I will be back to report after those. Any questions?
You say they're renovating Stocking Hall?
Yes.
So what are they doing with those people while they're renovating?
Oh, that's a whole game of, what is that, musical chair. So it's a logistical nightmare, but they have it all figured out. It's all mapped out. Not pretty, but it's going to happen.
And it's not the waste management part that he's talking about.
So those folks that are down in the basement are actually going to have a nicer area when they're done?
The area is going to be nicer. I'm not sure if the original tenants are going to be going back there or not.
So that could get moved as well. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We'll find another basement for that.
Any other questions for Michael?
Michael, did you want to say anything about the campus master plan stuff that's happening in January? No? Okay.
No, you can say something.
No, that's okay. I'm going to have to report.
Thank you. Report from UA representative.
I actually have some notes here from Rodney. It was not at the last meeting, but so I'll just read those off to you real quick. The things that happened at the last meeting, the UA resubmitted Resolution 6, which was the support of the TIMS. He says, after a rousing debate, I wish I was there for that one. and since they've resubmitted it, the president has since accepted it with the rewrites that they did. The UA also submitted Res 9 resolution in support of the master campus plan. And the UA will, let's see here, the UA will, no, wait, you wrote that here. The UA is looking forward to our first meeting of the new year as we have Provost Biddy Martin invited to talk with them. He didn't give the subjects that she'll be talking about. And that's all it.
Any questions for Bill? Bill, thank you for your representation. Okay, let's move on to approving the minutes. They were emailed out ahead of time so we could look at them. So I'm going to try to move right through them. Got some more recent ones here. October 3rd, the minutes. Just in case you didn't get them, I'll just give everybody a minute to look at them here. Anybody see anything?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. In Section 5, Virginia Amundson, A-M-U-N-D at the end. And under reports for employee education, section I, it's Gary Boyer, B-O-Y-E-R.
Just those two. far. Okay, can I get a motion to approve the minutes with these two corrections?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Second.
Okay, all in favor of approving the October 3rd minutes with these two corrections as noted?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, minutes passed. October 17th meeting minutes. Take a minute to look at these. Anything? Okay, can I get a motion to accept October 17th meeting minutes?
Motion.
Second?
Second it.
Bill? Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we will pass these meeting minutes on October 17th. Thank you. Move on to our committee report, the executive committee. We met, and we're going to be meeting after this meeting again, and we talked about the winter retreat, and we talked about the employee handbook. Leon, do you know about the winter retreat?
No.
Okay, you'll hear about it in a little while. Other than that, everything's going good. It's a busy time for everybody. One concern we have is release time for volunteers such as EA members from work. There's a lot of pressure from supervisors. And, it's an issue that has been brought up before. We have lost some members because of it. We have some current members that are actually feeling the heat. And Carrie and I are going to, in Venice, at our next meeting with Mary, are just going to mention this to her again and see what her thoughts are on it, maybe give us a little direction. Other than that, you know, everything's being covered in the agenda. So that's what we talked about at the executive committee. SAR, Staff Award Recognition. I'm going to give this one to Dennis, but we beat you, Donna. We met.
Cool.
There's some committee that didn't meet yet.
We met not so very long ago. I remember when Brian Barpool, Joe DeMarco, and I met and went through the nominees for the George Peter Award. There were four nominees. Three of the nominees we deemed worthy of the George Peter Award. The one first award was given last week, and as Brian said, it was browsing. There were more than 80 people there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a one of the memorable ones. Okay. And we have two other people who are in the pipeline now. And Amy, I think we indicated one was in February and one was in January, but those are just arbitrary.
Yeah, we're working with Mary's calendar, which is pretty tight to try to get time.
So Marilyn mentioned that to me too, and it may not be even till February that one of these takes place.
Yeah, I got dates from the next month, so
scheduled into? Okay. All right. But the committee doesn't have a plan to meet immediately again soon, but do you have any more nominations, Amy? Okay. Maybe after the George Peter Award story takes place in the January 10th Cochrane, we might get some nominees. Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Communication Committee, Carrie is not able to make it today's meeting. And, she asked that Peter and I kind of talk about what's going on. I'm going to start now.
We met last week for me and Bill. And we talked about some stuff. We talked about the goal tracking, for one.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
Well, for my own personal standpoint, quite honestly, I've been out of the loop for about a month working on some things, some regular work, I guess. Things that are kind of hot, heavy. The goal tracking, we still need to follow up on it. The main thing is we have the mechanism, everybody's agreed to it, but we still need to get it out there where it's available to everybody so that you guys can do your own updates. Again, it's the thing where we all have to support and work with it. But first thing I need to do is get it out there. So that's one of my priorities for the January time frame, is to make sure we get that up there now so you guys can actually see it and use it. Hopefully I can do something even before the retreat so that we can have something set up and then we'll be able to talk about the retreat too.
Definitely at the retreat we'll be able to go through some of our goals and see how we're doing overall.
Yeah.
Thanks. The listener leaders, I plan on emailing out the final documents after the break, and then we'll put it online and on the EA website and hopefully publicize it either in paw print or email or whatnot, and that'll be done out of the way finally.
So you're going to be working on it over the break?
Yeah, feverishly.
say that again.
I'm
going to say it's Mary.
Our Christmas.
Ask for her edits, you know, by New
Year's Eve. Anything else? Or
one more thing. We just kind of reviewed, recapped the things we were working on. I don't think we had anything significantly new.
No.
Again, I ask if anybody can join this committee. They need more members. Okay, Bill, we'll move on to finance.
Finance committee. Me, myself, and I, and actually Pat. Pat and I have not met. There has been several things that have come up, though, but what I'd like to do, I guess since it's mid-year for our session, I'll call it a mid-year report, but I'd like to put some things together in the report, send it out so you guys have a chance to review it, and then we can talk about it at the next meeting and spend a little time on it. Really addressing where are we at this year's budget so far. Also learn some things about next year's budget. So I will put that together. I'll have it out before next week's meeting or the next meeting, and then what I'd like to do is just have a review in here. I'd like to have everybody have a chance to look at it.
Yeah.
Okay.
One question, Bill.
Sure.
Is Pizzagate laid to rest?
Pizzagate is laid to rest. That'll be in the report.
All right, thank you very much. Emergency grant funds.
I haven't heard anything from anybody.
There hasn't been a meeting in a long time, and it's probably a committee that needs to get re-energized and look at and review the criteria. I think that's been on the plate for a while. So let me talk with Deb Billups and see if in January if I can do the
committee. Am I remembering that she was going to step down from leading that committee?
I don't think that's
okay,
right.
Good.
She was going to step down from the auction.
No.
She just didn't
maybe
have
it. That's
yes.
The, okay,
yes.
Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see when she wants to get together. Personnel policy.
Okay, I've kind of, so last time I kind of skipped it. I missed a meeting and then we had a meeting canceled. So we've actually had two personnel policy committee meetings.
Exactly.
She had a top one.
Over the top. We nominated three people.
Yeah.
Game over.
So Beth McKinney, this is kind of ongoing since last spring, but you'll remember Beth McKinney was here in September. The personnel policy committee met with her in October, and what we'd like to do, and I have yet to kind of put everything together, but what we'd like to do is we have some, she's developed some questions, and we have a bunch of material that would support in the personnel policy committee's opinion. It would be worthy of doing a spring forum like we did for Chili Cats and listening to leaders to find out what people feel about the wellness policy, the time off for wellness, get people's impressions of what sort of, we're sort of proposing, her recommendation was that there would be a 3 hour a week minimum, if that was enough time for people. I'm sorry, hour and a half. I don't know why I said 3 hours. I think it's what people think they get, sorry.
Yeah.
So hour and a half would be the minimum. And how would that fit into the schedule? So those sorts of questions. So I have it, like I said, it's here, but I just haven't put it all together in like a white paper to give to you. I thought that might be a topic at our retreat,
that we would be able to get into a little bit, and then I think about doing those in the spring as forums. So
we can schedule those forums super quick, so we can get Mary on there too.
Yeah. So it'll be forthcoming. I don't have enough time to do it. And then in our most recent personnel policy committee meeting, Lauren Chokoby and Alan Nitman came, and we talked about changes to the gender bias. Forgotten the
name of the program.
Yeah, the bias response program. But there's going to be a change to the policy. I was just looking at another policy yesterday. It's 4.2, so that's stuck in my head, and I know that's not it. But the change to the policy to also include discrimination and bias. So it's just sort of a rewording of the policy that's there about discrimination, but it doesn't include bias. So that's it. 6.4. There you go. Policy 6.4. So that's in discussion now, and they're that committee is making recommendations. They wanted to run it past us, and again, they were just looking for us for just a little bit of feedback. But it's very minor changes to the existing policy. So as soon as they have that in a draft form ready to go to the policy advisory group, then we'll be able to share it with you all. And then the other thing that Alan brought up was it's around the display of religious symbols. And they thought this might be a little topic for discussion, maybe and maybe not. Apparently, in the past, there have been people who have been offended by excessive holiday decorations. I don't know how better to say that.
Those two Christmas trees.
So he was just wondering kind of what the atmosphere was like out there now. And this, again, it would sort of be a discussion more for our retreat. If any of
the
you
Christmas
would notice,
be over then.
But you know, but actually it's kind of a good thing, because then you can look back and say, you know, was that something that came up in your work group? Did you hear anything about it? Were people, you know, annoyed with all the decorations? I mean, I brought up the issue from our building perspective that there's just, you know, there are a few people who spend all day decorating and don't do any work, and that ticks people off. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? It's around the decorations, but it's not really
decorations. No, wait a minute. Lee Scorton and Mary out of it.
You know?
I'd really like to have that conversation at the retreat, because on the other end of the campus, on North Campus, for lack of a better word, residents were asked to remove white Christmas lights from the bushes that were outside because they might destroy the tree. And the community, as far as I'm concerned, there are lots of children over there.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it should look like Toyland. They're kids. I mean, they're little kids, you know? So that really annoyed me that they made them take them Christmas lights off that bush because they would destroy the bush. That I would love to get into that conversation.
Do you know who asked for the lights to be removed?
Yeah, we'll have a conversation.
A private
conversation.
Yeah.
I also welcome this at the retreat. I think this is a great sit down and let's go nuts on it. It's a great topic.
Yeah, it'd just be, you know, an interesting little discussion. Alan wasn't really sure. He didn't have a barometer, and that's what he was looking for. Is this an issue or is it not? So,
okay.
I said I would bring it up. And
how should I word this?
Guidelines for
Grinch.
The display of religious symbols.
That means I have to figure
when out. I first came here, EH&S used to send out a flyer to all the buildings of what they recommend, what not to do, and to do. Does that still occur?
Yeah, actually, Lynette Chappelle-Williams is the one who sends out a letter this time of year, and it includes the EH&S guidelines on fire safety and that
right.
sort of thing, the display of religious symbols and that sort of thing. And I forget, what's the bottom section?
Inclusive seasonal displays.
Yeah. What's inclusive and what's not? So that does go out on an annual basis. This is like the first week of December, I think she traditionally sends it out. It goes out to the DVD list, and I don't know who else.
The Chronicle used to run an article about it. I don't know if they did this year or not.
So,
because I had two houses, they had live trees.
Ah.
And that, you know, that was a big issue with the H&S.
Yes, it is. It still
and
is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
good time for discussion.
Okay, good to know.
Anything else for us? Those are
no,
three good ones. Thank you.
So I'm sorry. Like I said, we met twice, and I just haven't had a chance to really get stuff together. But I will do that over break.
All right. Thank you, Donna. Peter, IOC.
Yeah, I'm going to like to schedule a meeting in January so we can talk about some questions, stuff like the upcoming elections, because we're still last fall. We're definitely going to need to do that election stuff. Committees, like I mentioned earlier, we need you know, people to join committees. I think it's a rule in the charter that every person has to belong to at least one committee. I mean, we have never really enforced that, but be nice if people made an effort to join at least one committee so that we can have full committees doing the actual work of the EA. So, you know, as you can see, personnel policy is doing a lot, and, you know, communications, trying to do some stuff too, but there's a bunch of different committees that need to work on a lot of different things, and that's kind of where EA does the bulk of actual stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. Some of these committees do need some help.
Oh, and IOC needs members too. I think we have two, including me.
What's the IOC stand for again?
Internal Operations Committee.
Okay, any questions for Peter? Okay, University Benefits Committee report.
Oh, well, it's really not anymore, is it? I said I'm no longer chair of that committee. I'm still on that committee, but we just haven't met yet. And like I said, the last topic of information was the medical reimbursement, so the revamping of, particularly affecting our retirees' health benefits, because that was the biggest change. But I think that that's something that really won't roll out until next year. So, you know what I mean? There's just nothing going on.
All right, employee education.
Employee education, the last update that I have was I met with Maureen Brawl in Mary's office. To find out what, if anything, was happening with the tuition reimbursement policy. So, and I think I shared with the committee that she let me see some things, but then she didn't let me leave the office with them. So it's all still very top secret and all of that. So I'm waiting for her to get back to me. I think that Paul Bursick is putting something together and pitching it, and I mean, maybe it's bouncing back and forth between Mary. I'm not exactly sure where that's at. So I'm going to follow up with Maureen first of the year, which was, that was what we had talked about when I met with her in October.
So I believe there's been Kelly over here. Kelly Spicer. Spicer?
Spicer.
And Kelly is would be very interested in joining the employee education.
Yeah, and I got that email, and I'm very glad to hear that. So as soon as we have something to go on, I mean, there was no point in us meeting until I hear back from Maureen if if there's any traction with what's been discussed.
So what was discussed was what?
Yeah, so what's been discussed is kind of what I've been pitching for the last, how long have I been here? Is that the tuition reimbursement rate for staff members resemble more like what the children's tuition benefit is, which is 50% of tuition here at Cornell, of course, employees.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to another school.
But if you go to another school, it's 30% of Cornell.
Right, so you're going to get at least 50%.
Where the staff members is,
yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous, like 4% of the SUNY tuition,
right.
You know, you end up with $30 or something.
Okay.
I don't get her on the internet.
No.
Mm-hmm. The internet reimbursement, online class.
Of course.
Okay. So anyway,
okay.
That's what's been put forward, which is great. I'm really happy about that. But like you say, it just hasn't gotten any traction yet.
Okay.
And you'll remember last spring that I had the staff graduates purposefully come to my speech to receive the let them know that people are taking advantage of this benefit and their contribution to the university. So.
Okay.
All
right.
That's all.
Okay, I wonder, I'm just wondering if our Denison, if our speakers are out there. We'll move on. So, any old business?
I think Leanne had a couple of things. Oh. Although, never mind. New business, sorry.
Okay. New business. Finalizing the appointment of Deborah Howe to the EA. Just want to point out that Deborah is sitting in a contract exempt seat, which is up this year, or in 08. So that's going to be a seat that is up for election. What happened here is with all the, you know, losing people, having people join, we people are sitting in the seats that they don't, they shouldn't be sitting in. And that's going to play a part as elections come along. But at that point, let's welcome our speakers, and we can get back to it. Yeah, come sit at us.
Well, what do we need to do to finalize the appointment,
yeah.
Brian?
Just say that she's appointed for the record.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, Deb Howe is our newest EA member. We voted her. She will be sitting in the contracted position on the employee assembly. Her term is up in 08.
Well, you voted her in last time. It's just mostly just clarifying what seat she's in.
Okay, we'll do this for a rest, and we'll go to our speakers. How are you? I'm Brian.
Brian, how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Jennifer,
nice to meet you. This is our employee assembly.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine.
James and Jennifer are from the United Way.
I will defer.
Okay. My name is Jennifer Stride-Mullen, and I'm the Executive Director of Suicide Prevention and Crisis Service, which is one of our local agencies right downtown. We are a United Way agency, and we're asked to sort of give a specific color to the United Way face, I guess, by being here today. I have some brochures and some little pocket cards with some handy information. One is about our services. The other has warning signs about suicide and what to do, as well as a little summary of our services, if you'd like to pass them out and take a couple extra if you would like. I find it interesting to start with the question, do you think there are more homicides or suicides in the U.S. each year across the country? More homicides or suicides?
Suicides.
Yeah. Many people get the opposite. There's actually twice as many suicides as homicides. Mm-hmm. Most people die by homicide. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing figure. There are about 89 suicides per day in the country, and it's the 11th leading cause of death across all ages. For young people ages 15 to 24, it is the third leading cause of death behind accidents and homicides. Some of the statistics people have drawn up, an estimated 1 in 12 college students have made a suicide plan. Here in Tompkins County, there are about 10 or 12 suicides per year, which is actually in line with New York State and U.S. averages. Sometimes the ratio seems high, but that's because people often commit suicide here in very visible ways, primarily jumping off the bridges. And each year there's another 15 or more suicides outside the county that impact residents of Tompkins County. Another last interesting fact, most people will think about suicide, at least in passing, at some point during their lifetimes. So 38 years ago, a couple of gentlemen associated with Cornell, George Miller and Jack Lewis being two of them, decided they wanted to do something about suicide in the area, and they created our crisis line and our suicide prevention organization that I'm the head of. And we are, 38 years later, we are still there answering the phones. We have a 24-hour crisis line that's available, obviously, anytime to anybody, and it's free, it's anonymous, confidential. And we help people with whatever is a crisis in their life or at that point in time. So yeah, there's people that are thinking about suicide. But we also get, we get callers about everything. We get callers who may be upset because they have a child that has some serious medical illness and they're having trouble dealing with that. We get calls from the elderly who may be lonely or may suddenly be homebound due to a broken bone and just really don't know what to do with themselves. We get calls from students at the high school, college students, obviously, anybody that works in town and doesn't work in town. And we even get some calls from outside the county. So we're there. We have a very clear-cut model of how we help people through their situations, develop a plan, and we always assess for suicide because at the base level, that's what we're all about. We have volunteers that run the crisis line that actually man the phones, and they get 36 hours of training. We have shared some training information and helped develop a manual and have at times run some of the sessions with the Cornell Ears program. So we certainly work with other organizations in town. We do some other things. One is we do education. We are in some of the local schools where we'll do like a couple health classes for middle school age kids. Sometimes we get invited in for a psychology class or a health class on the campuses. We go to community groups, quite a wide variety of programs, anyone that asks, basically, and that's free as well. And we have some after trauma services. We have a suicide survivors support group, people that have lost a loved one to suicide. We often are called out to perhaps a place of business when someone has died suddenly, even by a car accident or whatever. We were involved helping a family that was impacted by a death. One of the surviving members works on campus here, and we helped them in October. It can be a house fire, some other thing, but we're there. We offer a couple of visits in after trauma circumstances and try to help connect people with other resources. So we do all this with 9 full-time equivalent staff. We're funded 40% by state mental health monies that are allocated through the county, to each individual county and then on through to us. And United Way provides 8 to 10% of our funding. And that's really important to us. Some organizations can do great fundraising because, well, they have the assistance of being able to show pictures of puppies or pictures of kids holding elders' hands, and they do these great things. Well, our primary service, actually almost all of our services, are anonymous, so we don't have any pictures or warm fuzzies. And in fact, a lot of people don't even like hearing us, our name, Suicide Prevention Crisis and Crisis Service, but Suicide Prevention puts people off. And yet, I think we're really important in the community. And so, for us in particular, raising funds under the umbrella of United Way is a big help. We certainly do our own fundraising, but that United Way umbrella takes some of the stigma away associated with us. Many people are uncomfortable being identified, even if it's writing a check or getting an envelope with suicide prevention as a return address. So we really rely on United Way to help us with delivering our mission, funds to deliver the mission. So we're always there. Our numbers on our little card.
All right, then I guess I will do a share from story by passing out some brochures. And please feel free to take one or more. I'd just like to thank you for having us both here today. And I thank you and the Cornell community through you for the support that you provide to United Way, not just this year in this campaign, but ongoing through the years. And while I think that everyone should give to United Way because I think it's the best way to build and maintain a strong community, I understand that there are other activities, and I know that the Cornell community is involved not only with United Way, but other worthwhile organizations in the community that make a difference. And that's appreciated. I thank you for that. We have a unique community in many ways, and a part of it is the giving that takes place. United Way, when Dennis came, you know, he wanted to ask me to talk about some of the things that were happening, the message about that were happening, you know, the changes. And there are some significant changes, but I think that's the reason that nonprofits exist. It's to bring about change in communities, because it's easier for nonprofits to bring about change than it is sometimes for other institutions and private and for-profit entities. One of the things that we do that we're most proud of is the work of, we support the work of our member organizations, and you've heard about one that does very important work. And it's not the only organization that does work quietly in the community, and we have the good fortune to have access to resources and to community members and to make it possible for them to receive funds. And as Jennifer said, some people do indeed have problems just hearing the word suicide prevention and offender aid. Those are things that turn a number of people off in our community. At the same time, there are real needs there, and there are human needs, and we have the good fortune to try help and address those. In the last 3 years, I'd say, you know, we try to maintain and grow the support for the member organizations, but also understand that there are some pressing needs in the community that are going unmet. And what you have before you is an attempt to deal with one of those pressing needs, and that's dealing with health care and health care, affordable health care. When we did a community assessment, 5 years ago now, affordable health care was one of the top five things listed by everyone, regardless of it's a household, an employer, for-profit, non-profit, government, everyone set up for, and it went across all income levels. Regardless of where you were, health care is an issue, it's something that was at the top of people's mind. One of the things, it's a big issue, and it's certainly one bigger than our United Way can take on. But one of the things that we've done is we've looked at a small portion of it and looked at the uninsured and looked at how that we can get meds to people who end up in the emergency room. Sometimes people are using, and this is not surprising to anyone here, people are using the emergency room as their source of primary care. And it's defeated when they go and they receive a prescription, but they can't fill the prescription. And the hospital is unable to provide medication. So what we were seeing is a number of people showing up for true emergencies, people showing up as looking for primary care, and then ending up back in the hospital 2-3 weeks, a month later, and their situations had deteriorated. So what we started 2 years ago with support of the Brooks Family Foundation is a program to provide meds. Medications to anyone who goes to convenient care, the hospital on Warren Road, the emergency department, and now this year to the Ithaca Free Clinic. If you go and you have a prescription and you don't have the resources, insurance to pay for it, we will pay for it in partnership with Kenny Drugs. And Kenny negotiated a reduced rate with us. And so, as it said, through 2006, we were able to help over 600 people in the county, and some from outside the county, because as you know very well, we're a magnet for employment. So there are people coming in who live outside the county who are here. They're ill. They go here for primary care because we're fortunate to have very good care, and maybe better care, I think, than the surrounding communities. The other thing that we've done that area where we try to look is around hunger and food security. And Cornell has been the leader as we started our campaign the last few years with a day of caring and a food drive. And we've raised up to 7 tons of food over the years through the food drive. Hunger and food security is a serious issue. It's a serious issue in the rural communities, and it's an invisible issue. And it's one that we really started to get a handle on when we did the assessment. But it's hidden, and people are going without food and access to food in the rural communities, and it just goes below the radar. One of the things that was a big concern to us has been how we impact children, and thinking that if we can have a gateway and be able to provide food to children, ensure that they're food secure, it will help with families, and that might be a way to get food and resources and determine the scope of the need with families. So in the last month, we have funded a backpack program in the Ithaca City School District and the Newfield District, where children are identified by teachers, counselors, family members. It is one of those kind of mixed blessings in that. And we receive phone calls from family members and neighbors saying that this kid, my nephew, needs to have food. And we think it's good that they know that the resource is there, but the fact that that need is apparent and that it is very real, that's somewhat disappointing and disturbing. So we're trying to address that. If you're in Newfield, Ithaca City School District, those individuals can identify you, and we provide a backpack of food, food purchased through the food bank of the Southern Tier. So we're purchasing at very low rates on the pound. And it's nutritional food. It's food that can be prepared by a young person, non-perishable, but it's enough food to get the kids through the weekend, and it's packed in a generous enough manner that there can be food available for family members. And if that leaves a family member to look and seek other assistance, then that's very good. I mean, one of the stories, I mean, it's really kind of heartbreaking when you think about kids who don't want to go on holiday, don't want to take break for a summer because they won't have food. And so that's been a real issue, and that's a problem we're going to try to address. So we started with Ithaca and Newfield this year. This fall, we will expand it to all the school districts in Thompson County, because I mean, I think our board is taking, to Mary's name, Mary's on the board, the position that you know, every kid in Thompson County should be able to go to school and have access to safe, affordable, and adequate levels of food. One of the other things around food is looking at the other end of the continuum, and that's looking at seniors. We have a very fast-growing population of seniors in Tompkins County, and people are moving back from the Sun Belt. They're moving back from Florida because of the resources here. They retired, get away from the weather, and left, and now they see the resources here. I don't know why anybody would want to get away from the weather, but some of those people have, and they come back now because of the services, because this is a service risk community, and so the numbers are growing. And one of the things that we just started, just funded, will start in January, the program with FoodNet. We had two pilots the last two summers where a social worker rides with the Meals on Wheels driver, and has information on certain households and goes in and talks to people about their needs, looking first at low income, but looking at other needs and people who seem to truly be alone, and try to assess if they have other needs and to make sure if their food needs are being met. Some people, you know, use FoodNet, Meals on Wheels, as a social vehicle. I mean, the only person they talk to is the person that delivers the meal, and they try to talk, but he can't. But now we have a social worker who's writing, and that person can take time and find out if there are other issues. And that's been it's been pretty powerful what's happened. I mean, we've had situations where because of language barriers, we had one gentleman who was living with his sister staying in the basement because of what he never left the basement. And the sister was doing all that she could to provide resources for him and for her family. And there were resources in the community services that would assist her in caring for the family and her brother, and it would help him with his needs. And so we were able to make that connection. So that person will be, we're funding that for a two-year pilot with the Triad Foundation. We fund a little more than half of the salary. They fund the other part. They have much more money than they do, but they negotiate it really well. So we ended up funding the larger share of the salary for the first year. And then at the second year, hopefully it'll flip and, they will continue funding it. So trying to get food at both ends of the continuum and obviously looking at families, but thinking if you can get and have relationships with kids and with seniors, that will help you connect with families at the same time, making a difference. And so those are two of the new things I think that we're doing, as well as the important job of supporting the work of our members like Jennifer. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The program, the backpack yes. program for the kids, where is that? Is that out of Food Not? Somehow I missed how that. The food bank, where is
the food bank of Southern Tier provides the food.
Uh-huh.
And then the backpacks are packed discreetly at the schools.
Oh, I see.
And the kids given a backpack on Friday, or if it's a holiday, just before the holiday, and they're given up to 3 days, or I think it might go up to 5 days, but generally 3 days of food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like any other backpack, and it,
yeah,
so the kid won't stand out.
Yeah.
Do you give a forklift to take it out on?
No, that.
Do you stuff the backpacks with informational brochures?
We haven't at this point.
I was at the
vehicle. Yes, to reach the family members.
Yeah, good idea.
Jennifer, is it true that most suicide rates happen this time of year or not?
Actually, no.
Okay.
April, spring, is the peak suicide time, greater than the holidays. We're thinking behind that, which is only a theory, is that, you know, over the winter, everyone's pretty grumpy and down. And so if you're really seriously depressed or whatever, you're just like everybody else in a sense over the winter. But if spring comes and everybody else's spirits start picking up and you notice that you're still down and they're not picking up.
So even outside
college communities, the peak is in April and May.
Okay.
And obviously it's even emphasized in the college community.
Right.
James, all these good works that United Way does must cost some money. Can you talk a little bit about the budget and how you raise it?
The budget, the administrative budget. Okay.
Well, not even just the administrative budget, but the budget to fund the United Way agencies.
Oh, sure. I mean, the primary source of our revenue is the community campaign that takes place in the fall. And we're in the midst of that right now. And we're at about 81% of our campaign, and which puts it about $1.6 million. This year, we're trying to raise $2 million. We've never done that before in this community. The last 2 years, we've raised it over $1.9 million. And the goal is really a number. It's an important number. We have a sense of what the agencies will request. We know we'll never be able to meet all the needs, but it's the most that we think that we can realistically raise in a year. What we've done, so that's the major source, and it happens through employers, through individuals. Cornell Community is our largest contributor. I had a note informally that Cornell was going to reach its goal this week, which is $700,000, and that's significant. And because that's really the engine that kind of drives the campaign, because that's a message that we can go to other employers with and say, see what's happening in Cornell. And you need to step up, because this is your community too. And in terms of individual companies, a trust company, probably not a surprise, being locally, and their local emphasis is our leading corporate employee, as well as BorgWarner. They go back and forth year to year.
Mm-hmm.
The last 3 years, the trust company has had the lead, then they took it from BorgWarner. And they all both give over $100,000. So there is a drop from the $700,000 from the Cornell community to our largest individual employers that are just over 100, 120. What we've started in the last 2 years, a program that's been chaired by Cornell trustee and graduate John Alexander, chairman of the Seaboard Group, is the Corporate Cornerstone Program. And what that does is John has gone to his fellow CEOs in the community and asked if they will direct a portion of their corporate gift to United Way to cover administrative expenses, so our operational budget. And that way, we will be able to, the goal is to raise our entire operational budget through corporate contributions so that every individual gift will go 100% to services and programs. Last year is the first year, and we're able to say that this year that just over 91 cents of every contribution will go to a program of services. And that's a result of the corporate cornerstone gifts. And Cornell is a corporate cornerstone for this year. And so that will be the first time that we've had an educational institution become a part of it, of the cornerstone program. So it's the usual suspects, Borg, Emerson, the banks, all the banks, Trust Company, M&T, well, not all, but the two largest banks in the community are the corporate cornerstone. So that we think that will make a difference because we'll be able to certainly say that the administrative costs are raised offline and that everything that you give to the campaign will make a difference. It will go directly to a program or service. Thank you.
James, can I ask one more question? You said the $2 million is kind of the goal, but that it's well short of what you really need and so forth. Do you have any number of, if you could get to where you really wanted to cover everything, have you guys ever looked at that? Do you have any idea what you mean?
I would be guessing. I mean, we look at requests from agencies, and we look at what's requested, and that's a limited basis because we're only looking at 45 agencies and there are other services in the community. Mm-hmm. I can't give you a good number.
Okay.
I mean, it's something that we've talked about a lot at the board to say, like, what's the number? Is it $20 million? And some people talk about $10 million a year, and I don't know how valid that is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. What do you do as far as capacity building for member agencies?
Oh, great question. We do a couple things. One of our members is the Human Services Coalition. The Human Services Coalition provides a range of capacity building activities. Gary's on the board of the Human Services Coalition, from board training to staff training to grant writings, finding grants, and we fund their services. We've worked with the other funders in the community. We meet on a quarterly basis. With Triad Park, Tompkins County Foundation, the Community Foundation, and we all look at needs and look at capacity, and we try to come up with programs and provide resources as a funding community to support capacity as well. And then with our members, we look to provide services on an as-needed basis for their support.
Okay, I hope everybody did realize on our agenda that it did say this meeting may run late.
We can have the room until 2.
Okay, yeah.
2 o'clock. So we'll
okay, yeah, hopefully we're...
20-25 minutes.
Yeah. So I can move on to the reappointment of Leon Lawrence to the EA. Everybody knows that Leon did resign due to another job offer that he was going to pursue, and then... for whatever reason, decided that he would stay at Cornell.
He was afraid he wouldn't be called Denzel anymore.
Leon missed us. And, so he has written a letter asking for reappointment, reinstatement, and at this time I'd like to officially reappoint Leon back to the Employee Assembly. Leon, though, as you were gone, some things changed back to the whole seat held issue. The seat that you are going to be on is contract at large. And that is also up in 08. I just want to point that out to you.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. That's just what has happened. I just, we all feel as we needed to. People have been displaced. So I just wanted to point that out so you are clear that's something that we're going to have to get to as we come up on that.
And how did we determine that was the seat that Leon was filled?
Because the only other seats available are contract non-exempt and contract at large.
Yeah, I'm just asking how that one was picked out of the other vacancies.
There is a contract non-exempt and a contract at large. Neither of them fit Leon.
No, I know. So why did you pick contract at large?
I guess it was 50-50.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah. I don't know if there was a reason.
Yeah, that's what we did. It's the same.
Yeah, the same term and all of that. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to pick a fight.
This time.
It's just like, okay, how come?
No, it is other question.
Well, with contract at large, it's only one thing that he isn't. With a contract non-exempt, it would be two both.
Mm-hmm.
It's more his favorite color, I guess. That doesn't make sense, but. Well, Leon, welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm very happy you're at our college and back here. Leon has a new beautiful office over at our college.
Now we know.
What kind of car are you checking out? And a new printer.
The Mercedes Benz. The 99 Subaru was gone.
So your department's going to support Fly Kite?
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. So, welcome back, Leon.
Thank you.
Want to move on now. What we did with Deb Howe for being appointed to the EA is we had her talk about herself, and we had a question answer kind of session, and then we asked her to step out in the hallway so we could discuss it in private amongst the members of the EA. And Julie, let me grab her. Julie has turned in her packet, and she has had a high interest in the employee assembly for quite some time. And we were looking at moving forward on this earlier. As you can see, that October 4th, she did her campaign pledge October 4th. But we wanted her to go through the same process as Deborah. So I'm going to open this up to you now, Julie, to you can read.
I have my statement.
You want to do this thing here?
You got to read your statement. No, it doesn't have a statement. Well, I guess I can just talk a little bit about myself.
What do you do? Where are you from?
Yeah.
And we'll take it.
All right. I've lived in Ithaca for 11 years and graduated with a degree in fine arts from Rutgers University in 1993. I've been at Cornell since 2004. I first started as a photographer in a term position at Botanical Gardens, and I've kind of moved my way into a full-time position at the museum. I run our digitization project as well as the photography studio, so I produce the catalogs. Right now I'm involved in a fairly large grant project that we're collaborating with the library, CIT, and the museum, and in dealing with the large body of information that we have. So I'm fairly technology savvy. One of the things that I wrote about in my, just thinking about what my interests in doing this was that I'm only really just beginning to get experience in sort of group process and kind of how the group process works in the body of a larger institution. So it's very interesting to me. I'm interested, I've got a number of interests in the workplace. I'm interested in pay equity. I'm interested in diversity. I'm also interested in basically just kind of representation of staff members that might not normally be represented. I know the museum has never been represented on the employee assembly, and that's kind of new to us. And I think that it would be really good for us, as we're kind of our own little unit, to have a little bit more connection with the university at large. I'm also applying to grad school here, so I'm very interested in the employee education EDP program. Mm-hmm. But I still have to get in. I am still having to go through the application process and take my GREs next week, so I'm not anxious about that. But should I get in, I will be very invested in the employee education program. And that's basically it. I have a lot of outside hobbies. I've been volunteering through hospice, possibly participating actually outside with Kelly in the Alternative to Violence program. I have not done that yet, but I've been talking to her for a while, and I'm fairly active in my community, and it was very interesting to me to kind of get out of the basement of the museum, which is where I walked away. So, and I've been to a number of meetings, and yeah, it's still interesting. I'm not bored yet.
We're glad to have your interest. I heard interest in our communications committee, too, mm-hmm. I believe, right?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, I would think that with your talent,
yeah, I've been kind of making notes about like which area is sort of short-sighted. So I'm pretty open.
Okay.
But yeah, I actually do have very good communication skills, despite the fact that I'm a little nervous right now.
Put you on the hot seat. Well, if anybody, I want to open it up now. If anybody just wants to start asking Julie some questions, and. She answered my question already about what committee she would be interested in.
What grad program are you in?
PhD in history. So I'm a photographer by profession, but as opposed to like the MFA program, my work talks about people as opposed to talking about art. And I traveled to China this past summer with a history PhD and found that my interests and the questions that I ask with my work are much more in line with the history processes and disciplined history. So.
Wow. And how many, once you get in, how many courses do you plan to take each semester?
Just the course this semester. I've already been doing that, so it's just going to be, I'll be on like the many-year plan.
Okay.
You're applying.
I've already been taking classes, and as far as handling multitasking and being in a number of different areas, I'm pretty good at that.
I think you've been, you were here, you've been coming, and
yeah.
I think, people have gotten to know you. So. Well, at this time,
can I just ask a quick question?
Of course. I was waiting.
Dennis has known me for a few years.
Yeah, so we're going to go way back. Should we talk a little bit about group process and what it is you've become fascinated about and what aspects of it are of interest to you?
I think by my own profession, I generally work alone as a photographer, but I've more and more been working in collaborative efforts such as I worked in the Patrick Doherty installation that was in College Town, and I really like the way that an idea that an individual can have can really like grow and expand. I'm very interested in that because I think left to my own devices and my own mind, I think I know what's going on, but in the interaction and communication with other people, I think that it really gives a lot of room for growth. I'm also just interested in the collaborative process and how we negotiate, and just negotiations and kind of seeing something through from beginning to end and dealing with different diverse opinions and agreements or disagreements and kind of coming to a middle ground with that. And again, I think it's sort of a reaction to my own work as a photographer, actually that does involve a lot of communication. A lot of work I do is documentary work, and it really is a collaborative effort. And my work here at the museum is very solitary, and again, I look at this as sort of an opportunity to be more involved with the university and employee. I'm just thinking employee rights as a whole. So, because questions have come up for me as an employee, and just trying to seek out resources has been, hasn't been Byzantine at all. In fact, I've actually been really impressed with what has been offered here at Cornell. So, that's something that interests me.
Thanks.
Great answer. Group process is something that happens here. There's always a new idea that develops, and then a lot of times it goes further than others did.
Yeah, and that's what I'm finding with this grant project. And I started working on this 2 years ago, and I'm pretty much spearheading it. And now we have like 10 people involved, and just to see how having many different people feed into can really bring life and kind of you know, new growth to something that you might not have imagined before.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Any other questions? Or we're just going to ask you to step outside real quick and there's a knob on the wall.
Yeah.
And turn it up.
You might as well just stand there.
Any comments, guys? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've worked with Julie.
I
mean,
she sends
that
I've got half a dozen meetings.
Yeah,
she doesn't know what's going on. I mean, if we haven't scared her away, yeah.
I like her personality, and I like the way she looks at things.
I
really do.
I'm a little full. I'm afraid of
you. A little full, yeah.
Hey, I helped you on that.
As Julie mentioned, I've known her for a number of years, and what's really exciting from my point of view is how Julie has grown and developed as an individual. And I didn't realize that she was seeking a doctorate in history, but she's a person who has many talents and full of surprises, but has a lot of energy and is constantly devoting herself to growing. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great trait to have in this group.
Yeah, and I was just really creative, so, you know.
I didn't hear anything negative, right? Everybody,
there's no reason to keep beating around the bush.
That's fun, right?
Did
you turn the knob up?
Oh,
okay.
No.
Okay.
I was going to hand you a glass, but.
There was a lot of back and forth, a lot of arguing. We really couldn't decide.
Oh, really?
Okay. Well, we talked about. You're joining the EA, and.
Whether you like to or not.
Whether you like to or not, now you're in it.
We didn't scare you away. So.
Yeah, we unanimously decided that.
Thank you.
We'll have you on. What we'll do is we'll get you an official appointment letter and everything. But really, you will be. Help me here.
Endowed.
Okay. Endowed, not exemptee, which is.
That's 209.
Yep, that will be through 09.
Okay. Well, thank you,
everyone. Congratulations. Thanks. Welcome aboard.
08.
I'm going to come to get out of here. You better come right to the top of your Mercedes.
Is it okay? I actually have to run.
Go back to your big office.
Yep, I actually have to run too. Let me see what else. Yeah, but you can go. Thank you. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, everyone. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Welcome aboard.
I'm
excited.
Now we're
getting
me out
of the basement.
Cookies. Give her the rest of the cookies.
Yeah, thank you. I talked about the executive handbook already.
Right, but didn't know.
Who's leading the EA elections? Oh, is that you, Peter?
Pardon?
The next thing on our agenda is EA elections.
Well, I mentioned that, but neither Perry or Ari are here, so maybe we'll just talk about that as far as I see him.
Okay, we can
bring up actual information in January. We have it available.
Yeah, that's a good point. Ari's not here.
He's presented us with a calendar or the schedule.
So I guess for new business, we'll put on soup and hope.
I can speak just very briefly about it.
Sure. I'm interested to
I'm on the group, the committee too. Soup and Hope is an idea for a winter weekly series held in Sage Chapel and offering sort of nourishing the spirit during a time of the year that's kind of quiet and cold and unfriendly. And the idea is to have on Thursdays an inspirational speaker in Sage Chapel, and I will have to get back to you as to when it starts. It starts mid-March. The first speaker is, I don't remember who the first speaker is. Cal. What's Cal's last name? Cal Walker.
Yes, that's
Cal Walker is the first speaker. And the idea is that people come and sit in Sage Chapel and listen to Cal Walker talk about what inspires him to have hope. This is all tied into the Martin Luther King lecture that's going to happen in February.
and they will offer soup. Everybody will bring an empty soup. Everyone who wants to come brings an empty soup bowl, and they'll fill it with soup and have bread, so people can have soup and bread while they listen to a very inspirational speaker. I think it could be quite popular, but the Sage Chapel itself is a lovely building. And then you sit inside and hear somebody very inspiring who's doing important things. And
it'll be a what? Bi-weekly, monthly, weekly?
Weekly. For the first, I think the first 4 weeks, and then they think there's plans to extend it, depending on how it's received, another 4 weeks after that,
mm-hmm.
and which will take us in the spring.
Mm-hmm. And it's open to Cornell
everybody.
Community?
Mm-hmm. Students, staff, faculty.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that.
And being sponsored by CURW, Cornell United Religious Works, the Crest Center for Transformative Action. Cornell Dining is going to provide the soup and the bread. And the Division of Human Resources. And I think Leon was going to ask this group if you would be willing to provide moral support, not financial support. But if you'd be willing to sign on to sign on to and perhaps show up and be useful as greeters and volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Mm-hmm. That's
right.
A great thing.
Mm-hmm. Can we add the employee assembly then to the poster?
When's mm-hmm. the first one?
The middle of January.
And then so with the soup and stuff, this is a lunchtime.
It's lunchtime,
event.
Yeah. That's
good.
It'll start at 12:15 and run until about 12:45.
Yeah,
no problem. Okay, so we'll add the employee assembly's name.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Thanks.
Not to be, I have to run, so not to be rude, but anything else anybody want to bring up?
Make a motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Good year, folks.
The meeting. Very good year.
Boring. We can't let you close the meeting.
It is the end of it. Everybody have a happy holiday. We didn't talk about the winter retreat, but I think I'll really have to hear about some topics from that one to talk about, which I'm really excited about. That one is going to be neat. I'm going to keep my Christmas tree up.
What?
I think so.
Okay.
Good.
Good.
Right
good.
Out in the pool room.
All
right.
So
I'm not taking it down.
That
would
be
a simple
idea. Can I just submit them and
train
for the
survive the training?
Yeah, I think a couple of weeks.
I
did. We're pulling on a work draft from the facilitator.
Trouble.
Do it. We'll pass that on.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll be here and come back.
All right. I'll email you and come back.
It's a workshop.
What date is that? Should I be
Carrie's not here and Brian's not here, so
I can't say. I thought I'd
whatever's on Jen, if we have an agenda, that's it.
Can you help me downstairs?
Yeah.
Mine.
I need a job.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.